Okay, everyone, I'd like to introduce Fred as our speaker. I met Fred about a year ago here in Footsteps in the early 5 a.m. meeting. He's spoken there a few times. Fred has a little over 35 years abstinence, and I'd like to welcome Fred. Take it away, Fred.
Hi, thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity to let me speak with you all today and meet you and tell you what happened to me. First of all, I have to correct you. I don't have over 35 years of abstinence. I'm 28 years in the program, and I have about 17 years of abstinence from sugar. Now, let me tell you, I'm going to tell you what happened to me. This is my experience. I give it to you with the earnest hope that it may be helpful, may be useful to you. But it's me, and other people experience things differently. But I'm going to tell you the truth of what happened and what has happened as my life in the program has grown and has gone on. So I came, as Janet said. In the beginning of the end of 1992, beginning of 1993, just before I came in the program, I weighed over 400 pounds. I was very, very heavy, and kind of more important, at least from my perspective, was that I had a firm belief, a really deeply held conviction, that I couldn't put into words, but that my life was not going to really get any better. And I was already, I think I was 36 or 37, I can't remember. I'm 65 now, but I think I was 36, I think. I can't remember. Anyway, almost half my life ago. There's a million things that happened as a result of my experience in the program. But the great realization that I had, the greatest realization, which affected every moment of my life subsequently, was that there's a very profound difference between happiness and comfort. Those are two different things. And this has been very important to me in my trying to live the program and having my life improve as a result of living the program. Now, I'll tell you some things that are, some people may find odd. When I came into the program, first of all, the program was kind of split up in those days. There was people doing something called gray sheet, and there was other people doing other things. And some people had a very specific thing that if you don't do this particular food plan or this particular thing, it's not really the program. So the program was different in those days, at least as I knew it. And I'm from New York. I grew up in New York City and lived most of my life in New York City. I now am dialing in from Hollywood, California, North Hollywood, where I live now. But that's a relatively new development. So I was living in New York City at the time. Now, one of the things about living in New York City is that you can purvey food at all hours very easily, not hard at all. I didn't think, even though I weighed over 400 pounds, that I ate so abnormally, because everybody I knew liked, it's okay to mention food. Everybody I knew liked ice cream and Chinese food and pizza and all those things that I liked. I wasn't a big gourmet, but I enjoyed food. But everybody I knew liked food. So why was I 400 pounds and my friends were not? They were, like a normal weight or close to it. Well, those friends had other avenues of gratification that worked for them, that they were used to, well, exploiting is not the right word, but enjoying, let's say, using. And for me, because of who I was and because of the way my body and mind were, my life got very, very, very small, shoebox size, and there were very few things I could depend upon to make my life feel worth living. And I was a person, and this may be some true of some of you, I don't know, but I was a person who desperately wanted not to be alone, and yet at the same time was very much afraid of really walking hand in hand through life with somebody else. I won't go into the reasons why. It had to do with my childhood and stuff like that. But I knew how to work a situation with food, get it, and eat it, and I feel good. With other people, I wasn't always so sure about the kind of. I didn't want to drag myself out into the cold, rain of other people's judgment and rejection and so on. So I had relationships with other people, but they were often very, very limited. But that was my choice. You see, I had set it up that way. And I was smart enough and resourceful enough that I thought, well, if I make my life into this little life that I can control, and it's just full of happy experiences, and that's all, it'll be great. If my life is, to be vulgar about it, is my life is all ring-dings and blowjobs, it'll be wonderful. What do I have to worry about? In fact, it became a prison, this little life of my own creation. I thought it was going to be great. It was awful. Because the things that I really wanted, that my heart really called out for, having meaningful work, for example, which used all of me, not a little teeny part of me, having a real relationship with somebody that was based on more of an equality of intelligence, an equality of interest, an equality of power, rather than vast differences, which is what most of my relationships were based on. All these things, I thought, I'm too messed up. I'm too much of a crybaby. I'm too defective in some respect to ever have the things that my heart really wants. So instead, I'll get the things that I can get. So my life got messed up, not from pursuing my dreams, but from accepting the booby prize all the time, getting the things that I knew I could get, if you know what I mean by that. And food was one of those that I could easily negotiate, and it always did make life, for a brief time, feel good, feel worth living. But of course, it was brief. And of course, I had to keep returning to it. Now, to show you how long ago this was, I can remember countless nights falling asleep. I was a big sugar guy, liked, you know, cookies and all that, and a lot of it. In fact, if you're addicted to something like I was, if you go to the supermarket and you have your two bags or your three bags full of whatever, and by the way, I was a junk guy. Like, I like Doritos and, you know, cookies and shit, you know, not really food. I would prefer to eat just junk if I could live on that, and did eat a lot of that stuff. I remember waking up, and in the middle of the night, it would be 3 a.m. And in those days, television used to go off. It wasn't on all night. Television would go off. And I remember waking up with my heart pounding, and some of the food would come up into my throat, and I sometimes couldn't breathe from it, and I wouldn't feel like I was dying because I couldn't breathe, and the television would be on making this noise, and I'd be drenched in sweat, and I couldn't stop it. You would think coming close to death like that might stop me, and I had a doctor, a physician at the time, who was I chose a doctor who smoked. You know, I didn't want a doctor who was going to be mean to me. So I found a doctor who smoked. He was a really nice doctor, not the type to scare you. And I wasn't even 40 yet. And he said to me, listen, you know, I'm just telling you so you understand, you're getting to the age where people start to get picked off. You have high blood pressure. You have this other thing called idiopathic intracranial hypertension, all from being obese. You get into the age where people start to have a lot of trouble. You know, you're having trouble with your knees. You're not even 40 yet. Now, he scared me. Some people are scared into changing, but I was so, I don't know, scared and just not willing to deal with things. And I said, what the hell? Let's have a party. If I'm going to die, I'm going to die. I can't do anything about this. So I did. And I became more and more miserable and more unhappy. And I had a friend, this guy that I'm an actor, that's what I do, actor and writer. I had a friend that had been an alcoholic, and at a very young age, in his 20s, he went to AA and had a very good experience of it. And he told me about it. And he said, you know, there's this thing, oh, wait, it's like for people that eat the way some people drink. So I went to OA in Manhattan. And I chose, because I was primarily a night eater, I ate relatively normally during the day. Well, I say relatively normally, but you know, I ate, you know, not that abnormally. But from the time I finished dinner, which was typically maybe 8:30, 9 o'clock, I stay up late, eat late, till I went to sleep, which might be 2 a.m, would be more or less a graze the whole time, pretty much all that whole, period. Anyway, I chose some meetings in Manhattan where I lived just because they were late night meetings. Manhattan has in those days had tons of meetings. You could go too late at night. So I chose the meetings that were kind of far from my house, but I had a car, so it was easy. I got there. And right away, as soon as I got there, I kind of liked it because it was not like a for-profit thing. It was just one guy or girl trying to help the other guy or girl. And I heard a whole mixture of things, but a lot of the things that I had were really encouraging. And I was told about a guy who took people through the steps. Everybody said, the steps are the big deal. That's what you must do. So I found a guy who took people through the first 7 steps in 1 or 2 nights. Not a step a year, 1 or 2 nights for the first 7 steps. And one of the things he said, and I went through the steps with him. And by the way, one of the things I had to agree to was when I agreed to do the steps with this guy. This guy is now, I think, passed away. His name was Arthur W. But anyway, he took hundreds of people, thousands of people through the steps. And one of the things that I had to agree to was this was my only time I would ever do the steps in my life, in any program, ever. I agreed to that. I have never done the steps since. Why? I'm not going to tell you, but you could think about it. There were many things that happened to me as a result of doing the steps, but the thing that I got that was the most lasting was, if there's anything that you feel that is eternal, that is beyond your power, you must embrace that thing now and ask that thing to help you. And, sorry about that. And instead of just praying, in other words, saying, I want this, try and set up a channel going the other way. In other words, ask God, what is it that you want of me? Not just what do I want from you? What do you want of me? And the answer came back in a flash. It was easy. The answer was, try and be your idea of a better human being. In other words, try to control your own selfishness, face your fears. And that doesn't mean you have to be brave all the time, but be willing to endure a certain amount of discomfort to achieve a greater end. And in general, keep your word, keep your bargain about things with people and with yourself. And try and ask yourself, what serves the highest good? Not just about food, but about everything. About money, about work, about sex, about everything, about kids, about everything. Now, that's simple as an idea, but it completely changed the direction of my life. And the funny way that life works is it's like an angle. You have a little change down here, and then as time goes on, it makes a big change in direction in your life. And this is 28 years ago, almost 29 years ago. So it changed my life radically. And the great good, and we often talk about share the message of the program. What is the message of the program? Well, to me it is, you can change. Human beings can change. And you never run out of moments. At every single moment, starting right now, sitting here listening to me, I'm talking in California, wherever you are, if you're in America, Europe, anywhere, you have a moment, this moment, at which you can say, I am earnestly going to try this experiment. The experiment is to endure, at least for a while, what is uncomfortable for me towards a better outcome, towards a better life, and enlist the help of whatever I think the higher power is or feel it is. And by the way, you know, God may be real, may not be real. If I don't believe in something, it won't matter whether, in terms of how I live my life. It's not going to make any difference. Only what I feel in my heart matters. Another thing that I learned that was very useful was to backtrack. He said, a lot of people have trouble finding a God or a higher power because they're looking out here in the stratosphere. He said, look in here. examine the contents of your own heart. Do you know anything? Have you experienced anything that feels to you more powerful than you and eternal? And the answer was nature, the creative force, I don't know, whatever it is. Now, I don't really think that God is a man sitting with a halo in a toga. But if I need that, if I need an idol, if I need something to touch the hem of the garment, as it says in the Bible, I don't think God objects. Anything I need to help me in my limited, no human being can understand God if God is real, but I need something. So that's what I try and do, is to live, and I ask, and as I live, I do it, I ask myself all the time, but especially when trouble rears its head, which is often enough, what should I do in this situation? And sometimes I don't know, but more often I do know, and sometimes I don't like the answer. I don't like the answer, because the answer is something that's uncomfortable to me, or it involves giving something up, or it's a little hard, you know. But I know from all the years of experiencing it that it can be done. And very often, it really does make things better. To give you a silly example, when this lockdown, when the lockdown happened, for at least where I am in California, I was really frightened because I had four friends die from COVID. I'm 65, so it's very real to me. A guy and a girl I went to drama school with that I was good friends with, you know, so it's very real. Plus, I have some pre-existing things. I was really scared. So I hardly went out of the house for a year. So I was with my wife and kids, and we were kind of stuck together, which was not easy. My son also was not a full compulsive overeater, but I think had a slight problem, I think, with food. And he said to me, you know, Dad, why don't we like change our food plan and try and see if we can't use this time creatively? And we did. And I lost 45, everybody I knew got fat during the time. I lost 44 pounds and my son lost like 50 pounds. And, you know, we exercised and did other stuff. We took walks every day and we kept our heads reasonably together as good as we could. And, you know, it was very nice to hear him say, and he's only 18, let's use this time to do something good in the world for ourselves and maybe for other people. And in the end, that's what this program is. I'm trying to help you, and the act of helping you helps me. Everybody who knows who's read that big book, it says you can recover. I'd introduce myself. My name is Fred. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. When I say recovered, that doesn't mean I don't have to worry about it. Quite the contrary. It means I have to be aware of it all the time, but I have some degree of choice. I have some degree of choice about it. And that choice not only involves what I eat, what I choose to eat, and how much of it, but also whether or not I choose to help you and whether or not I choose to help anybody, not just with eating, but with all the things that people, that human beings need help with, right? So that's what happened. A change happened in my heart. In my heart, I realized that I was far from hopeless. And in spite of my weakness and my problems, there was a great deal of hope for me, and that there's no experience I've ever had that is as confirming and strengthening as succeeding at something that you have a deeply held belief that you can never do. When you do that, you think, Jesus, I was wrong about so many things. I was wrong about so many things in my own potential. And maybe even whether or not the world is a harsh and terrible place. I was wrong. Great feeling to be proven wrong about that stuff, at least for me. And, you know, my life is no less complicated. It's more complicated today than it was back then. I mean, I'm in the midst of getting divorced. I have health problems. I have a son with autism. I have all kinds of stuff. But my life is beautiful every day. No kidding. Honest. It's great every day. Even the shitty days are great.
2 minute gentle reminder.
2 minutes left?
I think, is it a 20 minute speaker?
Yes, Pat. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So, okay. So a little bit about food, just because I've talked so little about food. So this is just what I do. Essentially, I eat 3 meals a day and then one snack. This is just me. I don't eat any sugar because sugar for me has a sort of a chemical property. If I start eating it, I have a hard time stopping. I do eat plenty of things that have artificial sugar in them, like, you know, coffee and stuff. I can't stand unsweetened things, but I eat, you know, fake sugar, which I don't have a problem with. Since I started with my son on this new food plan, I don't eat any flour or potatoes or rice those kind of things. I think everybody gets the idea. So I eat essentially low carb, but I eat plenty of vegetables and fruit and stuff like that. But just no, like, you know, bread, pretzels, chips, that kind of stuff, or potato. And, it seems to be working. I will say that it's, you know, at this age, at 65, weight is not as fast coming off as it was when I was younger, but you could still do it. You could still do it. And why find a God, which is what they tell you to do? What's the whole point of finding a God? I can't tell you exactly, except that I think the idea is to have a way of dealing with life where your life is essentially happy. I think that's the whole point, so that you don't have to resort to behaviors that are destructive to find a life that's worth living. That's as good as an answer as I can come up with. But I don't think we're weird if we're addicts. You know, people say, oh, I'm an addict or something. I think an addict is just like everybody else. It's just that they can't find, for either a physiological reason or a psychological reason, a way of finding life good enough without doing something that's harmful. But I don't think they're defective in any other weird way. We're just people trying to make life bearable and even good. And the last thing I'll leave you with is that I had no idea when I was 36 or whatever I was, that life could be anywhere near as my life has been, near as good as my life has been, with all the trouble in it. And there's been plenty. It's great to me every day. And I hope you get the same kind of thing that I got out of the program and continue to get out of the program. I hope it comes to you because it revolutionized my capacity to love life and love other people. Thank you for letting me share.